Hello and welcome to episode number 365 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
We're doing this again.
I know, I can't believe it. Like, these are they come around every few years. They're always an emotional time. We've been on a journey with Saw on this podcast. Like, from the start, really, you know, like our second year, it was basically our first full-time year in 2017. We obviously had Jigsaw, and obviously since then we've covered, we did like our retrospective that's still available of all of the films. So this is the only, you know, horror franchise that we've done, like seminal horror franchise that we've done, you know, shows on every single film, which is 10 films deep at this time, which is just insane. Like, there isn't too many franchises that get to that magic number either.
I mean, we've done Scream as well.
We have, yeah, which is 6, which is, you know, very sizable.
Yeah, but, franchise.
Yeah, definitely. And that is, you know, those were individual shows as well, because obviously we kind of grouped the first, 7 Saws across 2 shows. So arguably more in-depth conversations.
I don't know. You don't get much more in-depth in our conversations on Saw movies.
Yeah, that's true. We go into the weeds on it, especially when we had like our own, you know, we did a whole breakdown episode of just the trailer of Spiral, and that whole, you know, fiasco that getting that year delay and then wishing it just never came out by the time we actually saw it.
God, I forget that had the delay as well. Man, our little brains, we sat there and was doing our little breakdown of a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What a journey.
I know, it's really crazy. And so to get back now, and it really is full circle with this movie, you know, with the returning cast members and such. So, yeah, cannot wait to talk about it. And we'll get to that in just a second, because there's one news item this week, which is a pretty cool one. It's pretty interesting. Like, it's mostly cool, but then it just has a couple of little small downsides to it that kind of take the edge off it slightly, which is a shame. But it is our good friends at Arrow Video, doing great work in 2023, has to be said. I think overall a massive return to form. Obviously coming off the back of the...
wild.
Yeah, like the recent ones have been spectacular. I think the Hellraiser one is just so good. Like, it's absolutely perfect. And then even getting a little treat like Tremors 2 is just, you know, a delight, because I never expected that movie to get the treatment. But this is a cool one because it's another box set. They've been going very, you know, we've said that recently. They've gone so hard with the box sets recently, you know, with the Psycho one as well. And it is obviously a franchise that is very beloved to us. Another franchise that we've covered in depth on the show, which is, in fact, the entire Child's Play franchise. So it's very cool. It's all 7 films together, as well as the recent Living with Chucky documentary, which I still haven't seen yet. I was interested in seeing that because I remember when it got it was at Fright Fest. I think it was last year when we went. It was just on a day that we weren't there. So I've always wanted to check it out. So that's cool that that's on there. But yeah, it's very nice. I think the, you know, right off the bat, it's not anything too crazy in terms of there's no new stuff. And we have seen very similar box sets for Child's Play in recent years. So this isn't like they've moved mountains to get all these licenses like some of the previous box sets that we've seen. You know, there is multiple ones. I think Scream Factory even did one either this year or last year.
Got the one prior to that, didn't we?
Yeah, so there's been multiple ones that are just nice. Now, obviously, this is in Blu-ray and 4K, which gives it the edge. However, this is by far, the worst part about this. And the thing that annoys me, which, well, I guess I'll get to in a second, but yeah, the story is that the first film isn't in 4K. Whereas, yeah, all of the other films are in 4K, and then the last disc with Living and Chucky is also just a Blu-ray, which is already just confusing to go over. But I think the reason why it's doubly annoying is when you look at the listing for the 4K box set, you know, it has the 4K sticker on the front, and it's very much like, do you want the Blu-ray one or the 4K one? Like, when I pre-ordered my Hellraiser box set, I made sure I got the 4K one, because there isn't too much of a price difference either. But it's really like they bury it. They don't make it clear at all. You would think they would put in like bold letters to make sure, you know, people aren't tricked into this. And I do think it's misleading, like purposely, because I had to like, I was looking at the discs and it was like disc one, Blu-ray, Child's Play, disc two, Child's Play 2, 4K, with the rest being, you know, all 4K other than the documentary. And it made me think like, oh, it's probably just a typo on the website. Because obviously they basically copy and paste the two listings across and they just change the word Blu-ray for 4K across the two listings. But it's not, you know, it's just the first film, for whatever reason, is not in 4K. So I think it's a little bit shady from them to not make that abundantly clear. And it definitely takes the edge off it, not just because, obviously, the first movie not being a 4K is disappointing. But, like, the best thing for me about 4K is you haven't got to worry about regions at all. Like, that's such an awesome win. And it's why people always say, like, oh, yeah, with Arrow, you know, they don't need to release it in the States if it's 4K, because you can just buy that version. Whereas with this one...
That's what it is.
If you're in the States and you get the shipped over, you literally just won't be able to play the first movie or the documentary, which is brutal. So, and like, I'd highly recommend people don't do that. Like, you know, with the Hellraiser one, because that is, again, it's just a UK release. Like, you can just get that and it'll work absolutely flawlessly. So it's disappointing. So yeah, it's a mixed bag. What do you make about this? I think it's a cool set. I'm not like massively hyped about the artwork or anything, but I think it's cool. But it, like I say, this isn't anything that we haven't really seen before.
I think that's the thing, is that first and foremost, I think it's a great point about the region, because that's as you were talking, I was thinking to myself, why is it not 4K? Like, even if they did just a rubbish 4K, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, a low bar 4K, not the usual care with restoration, which I, you know, would already be a bit disappointed with, but like, why not 4K full stop? And it's clearly there's a distribution problem. And they're like, well, yeah, I mean, if we put it in 4K, we know what we're opening ourselves up to, and so we're just not going to, you know, we know the name and the rights of Child's Play is, and you know, is all over the shop, and so it just, I don't know, it feels like it's muddied into that. But I think, you know, that is a disappointment, just for consistency rather than anything. And I think if you're going to get a box set of a franchise of movies and the first one isn't the highest quality, that's a disappointment.
Yeah,
you know, the latter movies are going to look better anyway. So it's the older ones that you want to have more restoration or you know, more upscaling on. But yeah, and I think, you know, I'm similar to where you're at with it, where I wasn't blown away by the art style. You know, when that Hellraiser one got announced, I was like, that looks fucking gorgeous. I need it, even though I already have it, Arrow, Blu-ray. Like, I'm going to do the upgrade, you know, and often their 4Ks have been the same artwork, you know, when they've done like, American Werewolf in London or Tremors or, you know, Hills of Eyes, that they've all kind of, you know, the artworks remain the same. And it's like, oh, okay, I've already got the cool artwork. The Blu-rays looked incredible. Do I really need the upscale? You know, I think of some of those Blu-rays that they did and it felt like 4K already. They were so good. And so it was, you know, why double dip? And the Hellraiser one was just an instant double dip, where I was like, I take my money. Like, it looks beautiful. And this one is, you know, it didn't blow me away. I thought the art style looked all right. Like, I can see what they were doing, but it didn't really feel like Chucky to me. And then, you know, the fact that I've already got Blu-ray sat here in this cool artwork, which is like, you know, the Chucky doll box art. And I was just like, I'm really happy with what I've got. Like, I've got them all on Blu-ray, and I've you know, quite like the package I've got. So, like, you know, the fact that we then don't have the TV show in it, and I completely get why we don't, but it doesn't feel complete. You know, it doesn't feel more complete than what I've already got, and I know that there's more of that distinct Chucky story out there, and I think that's also makes it, you know, impossible to please me. Do you know what I mean? So it's just all a bit of a hodgepodge where I'm like, okay, this is awesome, and I'm glad they have done it, but with what I've already got, I don't think I'll be picking it up, which is a shame, because if you'd have told me, like, oh man, like, just the announcement got me buzzed, but then after I thought about it, I was like, yeah, I don't think I can. Not for three figures.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm now looking at the listing again, and like you say, it is £100 for this 4K collection. Yeah, you know, it's a sizable. Yeah, exactly. It's a sizable figure. I don't part with that lightly. I want to get, you know, something that I'm very excited for. And like you say, it's just, there's those small things where, yeah, I'm totally with you. If I'm buying a box set, it's just strange to me to be like, oh yeah, the first film isn't in 4K, but the rest are. And like I say, that is the one that I'd be by far the most excited to see what it looked like in 4K. Because even looking at this list, in the Blu-ray, it says is a 2012 high-definition 1080p Blu-ray from MGM Home Entertainment. So that's already like an 11-year-old Blu-ray. So I really do think that there is room for improvement here. So like, that is annoying. Like, there's no ifs or buts about it. It's just frustrating. And like I say, if I'm going to part with that amount of money, I want it to be just a completely unanimous, like with the Hellraiser one, like, oh, I can't wait to get this instant pre-order. So I'm definitely not pre-ordering this. You know, I'll wait and see if when it's out and people have got it in hand, if it's something I'm like, oh, I need to get my hands on that, but I don't think it will be. And it's a shame, because if you'd have said like, yeah, Arrow are doing the complete Chucky box set, I feel like that'd have been like a home, yeah, that'd have been a home run. And it's like, and it's just these small, like, the posters with it are lovely. I actually, the artwork in terms of the front, I'm not in love with, but I do love that each individual film has like a different Chucky artwork. I think is awesome. And especially the one with Bride.
I do like that they did it.
Yeah, so it's just like, yeah, it's frustrating, this one. Like,
how many times in the Chucky, the seven movies, does the scene where he, Charles Lee Ray, becomes Chucky for the first time gets shown?
Yeah.
I was like, so when it happens originally in the first movie, it's not going to be in 4K, but then we'll get it upscaled multiple times in the latter editions?
Yeah, that's a good point. What someone's got to do is they just got to cut out all of like the flashbacks to the original film from like particularly 2 and 3, and just see what that looks like in comparison, because I bet that's going to look awesome.
You know what I mean? It'd be like if Arrow went, well, we're going to do Hills of Ice Part 2 in 4K, but not Part 1. And it'd be like,
happy days. Fine. Yeah, you got all the best bits.
Cool. Got to do the intro then, have we?
Yeah. He's got to do the boring stuff, have we, that no one likes. But yeah. Oh, it
looks like we're upscaling desert scenes.
But it's I'm even looking at this now, I'm flicking through it and seeing all of those other sequels all in 4K. It's like, oh man, like getting 2 and getting Bride and obviously getting like Colt and stuff. It's a shame, man.
Like, I get that. I think the problem is, like, I get that it's 7 movies and that's a lot of money. But it is just £100 is a lot of money to put out on a box set. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, like, that I think that's why, like, that put me off a lot, you know. And I don't know why, because, you know, screw it. But, I don't know, there was just something about it when I first saw it. I was like, man, that's a lot of money. Like, when you then, like, you know, films that I've already got sat on the shelf.
Yeah, and, I just look.
Not bringing a lot of new content to the table. The doc is cool. Like, we haven't seen the doc, and I don't think you can downplay that is new content.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, including us.
I was just looking at the Hellraiser one in comparison, and obviously that's £65 for 4 films. But you're getting it says on the description, brand new 4K restorations of all 4 films. So this isn't any sort of layover before. These are all brand new things, let alone that there's brand new commentaries. And there's obviously, you know, an entirely new version of the 4th film as well, a newly uncovered work print version of Bloodline. And also, like, man, I forgot how unbelievably gorgeous that box art is. Like, it's so good. I love it with the outer case looking so clean, but then the inner part with the book looks so spectacular. Like, it's so, so good. And that's out in like 3 weeks, so very, very excited for that one. But yeah, very, very interesting one. Glad that Arrow are keeping us in the news, because it was quiet for a while, but they're doing some good stuff, even if it's not perfect. Like, I'm glad that they're trying. But yeah, shall we can't delay any longer. Shall we finally talk about this week's film?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about Saw X. So yeah, like we said at the start of the show, the 10th installment in the Saw franchise, one that
fun fact.
Yes.
This is the first Saw movie since Saw 6 to have a Roman numeral in the title.
Nice.
Do you like that?
I do like that.
I thought you'd like that. I've been waiting on that one.
Yeah, it's not the only thing it has in common with Saw 6, but we'll get to that later. It's great to see it. You know, we've been on such a journey, as we said, and this was exciting to see. Like, it was a much more low-key thing in general, which I think was such the way to do it, because there was so much hype with the last two and with the you know, change in the titles, not necessarily calling them Saw movies, straight up, and kind of trying different things, having like the cameo of Tobin Bell in Jigsaw, which was by far the best part of that film. So then the last movie, which was the first one to just not have him in at all.
Hey, we got Barbara.
Yeah, and did we? I can't even remember.
Yeah, he was like on a wall. Like,
yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, he definitely was.
And so to get to this where they're really doubling down, you know, they're going back to the glory era with this movie set in between the first two films. And we've obviously got two massive stars of the franchise returning, with obviously Tobin Bell being front and center, and this being his kind of real standalone movie that we've pretty much never had. Which is just insane that it's the 10th franchise, and we're, you know, what, 13 years since this franchise initially ended with Saw 7. So it's really, or Saw 3D that it's officially called. So it's kind of crazy to go back to that. And of course, Shawnee Smith as well. Mm. So yeah, it's finally here. I guess that's all was the preamble. Do we go straight into the plot on this one?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. Like, it's so hard to even know where to start to unpack this movie. Mm. Like you said, kind of set between Saw 1 and Saw 2. And so we kind of start the movie kind of with John, and he ain't looking great. You know, he's deep in his kind of cancer treatment, in his cancer therapy groups, and kind of, a big chunk of the first act of the movie really in its entirety is John's story of just, struggling with this illness and getting this false hope that, he can be, you know, cured. And, you know, I don't think that's I think what's on the table is the 9 movies that preceded this. So the fact that we know, you know, this movie putting it between Saw 1 and 2, we ultimately know the end of John's story, you know? And so I don't think that can be, you know, downplayed, that like, we know that. So kind of when he got this, like, offer of a miracle cure and everything else, like, well, I know where he ended up, so this isn't going to end bad. And that's not a problem. And it sets up what this movie is, which is then he goes to Mexico for this, you know, he finds out about this radical treatment. He gets a phone call and finds out that if he goes to Mexico, he can get this treatment that will quote unquote cure his cancer. And he goes there, finds out that it's all a sham, and decides to extract revenge on the people that wronged him the only way that he knows how. And I think it's a really, you know, clever angle how much that, you know, we've said before in horror movies, when you get to a point that your villain is the hero, and that the fact that you're rooting for them, you know, when you watch a Freddy Krueger movie, you're just rooting for him and Jason and these other killers. You just kind of, you know, you've been with them for so long. And I think, like, with this, you know, John Kramer as the villain, his big return, you know, they had to make you want to root for him. So they made him attack, like, just absolute horrible people throughout this whole movie. And I know that's been, you know, Jigsaw's MO, kind of, and especially John Kramer's MO. But in this movie in particular, he's really going at people that you have absolutely no problem with him getting revenge on because of the way that they treated him. Mm. And yeah, the rest of the movie is really him extracting his revenge with an old friend. You know, and you know, we get to see Amanda making a reappearance. You know, you have to accept that this movie is set between Saw 1 and 2, even though it's made, you know, 20 years after. And you have to accept that these characters look very different.
Mm.
And you just have to go into that world just being like, okay, it is what it is. They're making a movie set between Saw 1 and Saw 2, you know, 20-plus years after these characters were acting in Saw 1 and 2. So, it's, you know, you got to just accept that.
Yeah,
you know, we haven't got that Star Wars money to you know, turn Hayden Christensen into a young man, so we're gonna have to just film them as they are and take it as what it is. And you know, I for the large part, I didn't really have a problem with it. You know, they appeared on screen and I was like, okay, that's, you know, this is what it is, and I just kind of went along with it.
Yeah, I think I was prepared because of the trailer, yeah. Because it definitely is a suspension of disbelief where, you know, particularly with Amanda, you know, we see that shot of her in the trailer, of her taking off the pig mask. And I think that's basically the first time you see her actually in the film.
Yeah.
And immediately I'm like, oh, it's jarring, but will I get used to it? And then kind of the first couple of scenes, I'm like, no, it is jarring. And I'm just going to have to accept it now. Because like you say, it's... That is the one thing that I think, you know, in future rewatches, I do think story-wise, this will go so well as a companion between those first two films. And I think that would be such an interesting way for someone to, certainly if you've never seen it, but even if you're rewatching them, to watch one, then watch X, and then watch two, and obviously finish off the trilogy at that point.
Ooh, I don't know.
Do you not think?
For the first time, do you mean?
Well, I think just in general, like, that's what I would like to do going forward, because I think...
Maybe if you've watched a lot with the story, but I think, like, that reveal in 2, like, you know, if you've not seen it, you shouldn't be watching X.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, because I did... That was what confused me, because I thought it was
2 and 3.
It is weird, right? Because I'm actually there with you now, where... Even though it's technically set between 1 and 2, you probably... Yeah, you should watch 2 before this. Yeah, it's actually like a first-time viewing.
100%. I massively thought this was set between 2 and 3.
I watched
the whole movie thinking it was set between 2 and 3, and it wasn't until we got ready to record the podcast that I looked into it a little bit, and I was like, oh, they're saying this is set between 1 and 2. Because, yeah, it feels way more that Amanda is established as, you know, Jigsaw's accomplice. And I guess that the problem is when we start to get into Saw timelines, it's like, holy fuck. Because, you know, there's like a 4-hour window that 3 movies are set in. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, oh, okay. They probably realized that there's no way to set it between 2 and 3, because 3 went instantly into 4, that went instantly into 6, that instantly went into 7, and then it went back to 5, and then it went, do you know what I mean? And it just... You know, it's chaos.
I also think it's the inverse of that, where with 1, 2, and 3, we have no idea how much time took place between those 3 films. And the only way that we can kind of discern time is the state of John, because
the rotten carcasses in the bathroom.
Yeah, true. Let's just, like, you know, cut them and count the ridges in the body. But, like, it's because he really is, like, in a bad state in all of 2. You know, in a way worse state than he is in this film, which again makes sense, this being before it. And then by the time we get to Free, two. Like, he's really, like, he needs, like, an entire machine and everything. He's so bad. He's, like, coughing constantly, can barely talk. Whereas, and then I think once we get to Free, he is literally bedridden and cannot barely do anything at that point. So this is, like, him kind of somewhat mobile. Which again makes sense, and I'm perfectly fine with. But I also love that, God, this is such a sore conversation. We've got so bogged down in the minutia of the past.
Yeah, it's one though where, like, I almost wish they'd have just hit the fuck you button, where they'd just be like, do you know what? Set after the first Saw movie. John Kramer's the killer. Amanda's joined him. Like, let's go. Because it does get muddy, like, the second you start to try to fit this in, that he just fucked off to Mexico for some treatment.
Yeah, and let alone the fact that it's like, I'm going to try my best to avoid spoilers here, because I'm trying to think, like, before I say I don't think any of this is spoilery, but he is known in Mexico. Like, the Jigsaw killer is known in Mexico.
I wanted to bring that up because, you know, I'm going to go into part of, you know, what the movie, you know, when it starts to unfold and when he starts to have people caught in the traps. It's one thing that I found very odd, because this movie is very much the Tobin Bell show. And I have no problem with that because he's awesome. But we've never had a Jigsaw a Saw movie where he is just revealing himself to everyone. You know, the second people wake up in the trap, they don't see the puppet, they don't see the pig mask, they don't just have a, you know, and at points, like, the cassette recording was also irrelevant because he's in the room. John Kramer's just stood there next to you. Like, and then he's gone, like, play the tape, will you? I can't be bothered to say it again. Like, it's weird, I found, that how involved he was with the victims. And I got to be honest, it did create a problem for me. Like, I did find it to be a bit disingenuous to the rest of the movies before it. And I get it that, like I said, this is the Tobin Bell show, and I love him as Jigsaw, so why not get as much of him as possible? But him, when he was talking with the victims and stuff, it felt weird, you know, to me. And I think that happens a lot with this movie, where it kind of just wants to give you everything. And it really is kind of like a fan letter to the franchise, where it's like, oh, you love Tobin Bell, let's just give you a fuck ton of him. You love the doll? Yeah, we'll give you him. You love this? Yeah, we'll give you that. And, like, I don't want to complain, because they are just trying to give us what we want. But I did find that bit weird, that, like, Tobin Bell was just interacting with the victims just far too much, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, I didn't have a problem with it. I think what we've seen in previous Saw movies is, and I agree with you, the second point, which I'll get to as well, but, like, we have seen precedent for this, but it's very limited. So I agree with you that this is the most we've ever seen of him interacting directly with victims in the middle or before or after certain traps. But it's not unprecedented. Like, we have seen it with, like, the guy who you know, made Jill miscarriage and stuff like that, that he was just in the room explaining him the trap and stuff. So it has happened.
That's what I was
think that there's a reason for it in this film, because this is personal to John. This isn't, oh, I saw a random person on the street that I think I can fix. This is, these people specifically wronged John Kramer. And so this is a revenge film, first and foremost. And I think that's why it works, is because this is, like, this is John with a personal vendetta against people that have wronged him, in a way that we, again, aside from, like, a couple of people, you know, specifically that guy with Jill, it's just random people, you know, that he doesn't really have any affiliation with. Where this is so unbelievably specific to him in a way that we've never seen before. So I agree with you that it is twofold, of, like, it's... it serves the purpose because it gets Tobin Bell in a room talking to people, which we all want to see, and it's fantastic. But I do think it made sense here. Like, if he was doing it with some other stuff, like the first trap we see in the movie, which is a real strange one, because it is the, it's the main trap on the posters and everything. And the way this goes down is, like, this was... There's, like, two traps I have a problem with, and unfortunately it's the first trap and the last trap. And this one was, like, real disappointing because, oh, man, I mean, we're scared, and we're going to have to just talk spoiler at some point because I don't even want to spoil something that happens, like, early on. But, like, it's basically forced into the movie in a way that doesn't feel natural. And I get it because the rest of the first probably 40 minutes of this movie is very slow, but I mean it in a good way. Like, it's concentrating on character and a story in a way that we haven't seen for a while. And I really respect that. I respect the boldness of the vision to just be like, no, we're just going to tell the story of a guy who's at his limit in his life and is desperate for any sort of relief and to find a way out of this, for some sort of hope. Because the world is so hopelessness, you know, filled with hopelessness for him at this point. And so I love that. And it really is, like, fascinating to see this side of John that we've never seen before.
Yeah, and you're very vulnerable.
Yeah, you have to remind yourself, like, it's a horror film, because that's what, and it's specifically a Saw film. Like, you know, these are films that do well to a casual audience that want a very specific thing. And so I get why they had to shoehorn in this one trap that I didn't like, because otherwise there would have been nothing horror-y for the first 40 minutes. But again, the rest of it...
Maybe even longer.
Yeah, but it really didn't need it, because it was all great stuff. And I think my only downfall with the first sort of the setup of this film is twofold, and I do want to blame it more on the trailer, just because I fucking hate trailers, against my, you know, normal traditions of not watching trailers, because it was a Saw movie and of course we wanted to talk about it. But it was annoying because you're like, you're watching it and it's all so well done and so well kind of character created. I loved seeing Cecilia the doctor and Gabriella and Carlos and like all these people that John's interacting with, but we know where it goes, unfortunately, because of the trailer. But then it is what you said as well, is that fundamentally, even if I hadn't seen the trailer, we know that John doesn't get cured of his cancer. We know that he still had the tumor in his head when he died, so like it is one of those things of like, yeah, the trailer did ruin it for me. But it's like, come on, would I have fell for it, I guess is the point.
Yeah,
they do such a good job of like of actually making you believe it at times, because I think they're so well acted in terms of their genuineness, and John just has such like a giddy excitement and like a, oh, this is going to be it for me. Like, it's weird that we know exactly what happens and we know it doesn't end well, and I've seen the trailer, but there were still moments in it where I was like, shit, what's gonna happen? Like, is he gonna be cured of it and then it's like another issue that reoccurs or something? So I was really fascinated by that. What did you make of I guess just like the first 40 minutes, you know, up until it becomes a more traditional sort movie of people in traps?
I completely agree that they needed a sore trap at the beginning of the movie. And they absolutely should have that. It's a sore movie, you know, and the traps are everything. And I think they should have just let it happen more genuinely and just be like, oh yeah, we're just going to show Jigsaw doing a random trap on someone.
Yeah, which would have been fine, because they've already established he is doing that at this point.
Yeah, you know, that was the best part about the first movie, when we were like in the bathroom and we were finding out like, oh shit, he's done this multiple times before, and like, how many times has he done this? And that's the question mark between Saw 1 and Saw 2. How many people did he put through traps? And if you ask Lionsgate, it's 7,000. And if you look at the timeline, if you look at the timeline, we only know like half a dozen, you know, and it's somewhere between those two. And so I just think the movie should have opened with a traditional Saw trap, just a really good trap, and then, you know, give us the gore, give us the bloodshed, and then boom, into a John story for 40 minutes. And that's not what the movie did with the trap. It really did shit the bed with it, I think. But then beyond that, I even what I was saying, like, I know where he ends up in Saw 3. There were points in this movie that I did feel like, fuck, have they lied to us? Are they retconning it? Like, is he good? And it is that hope, because it is this weird thing where, like, I think anyone that loves Saw is a little bit like, oh, it's a shame John died in 3. You know, like,
I've never felt that.
Oh, I don't know. Like, I think, you know, you look at every movie since 3, they've wanted him to be alive still. The fact that we've got multiple movies that happened on the same day as 3 just shows that. Like, don't get me wrong, we loved what it became and Hoffman and everything else, but the movie fucked itself when the voice of Saw, you know, died with John. You know, and so I was like, oh, are they just going to retcon it? And, you know, I'm glad they didn't, because that gets messy. But yeah, it did give me false hope at times. And yeah, I did. It got to the point where I was like, oh, I'm just like enjoying this origin story, even though it's not really, you know, it's not giving me horror. It's just a really good, well done story. And I like seeing Tobin Bell on screen as John Kramer a lot.
Yeah.
You know, was ultimately where I ended with it, and just kind of, you know, knew the fuckery was coming. And at that point, it gave you the justification where, you know, sometimes in these traps, you look at them and you're like, oh man, I feel for this victim. Like, I want them to live. Every one of these people, the second he locked them all in a room, I'm like, great, let's see these fuckers die.
Yeah, they really know that, because that's been something that has been, you know, inconsistent throughout the films.
Yeah.
Even when it was good, of like trying to find real scumbags to put in these traps. And I do think that this is spending so much time with them helps, because normally, typically what we see is people just thrown into traps. Yeah, and then we'll find out. Yeah, like with the tape or, you know, the intro, or it'll be through the course of a whole film where sometimes we'll get reveals as to why they're in there, if they're like the main characters in a big trap. But like, this is great because, no, you're just seeing them do what they do in the real world. And that is be, you know, complete con artists, and scamming the most vulnerable people in the world. And so to see that transpire, I found to be fascinating. And so, yeah, even though we knew we're getting to a point of like, yeah, this is a scam and he's going to try and get them back, seeing that unfold. But then when we get to those initial moments of like him having the surgery and all that stuff, I was like, man, I can't wait to get the reveal. And then getting the reveal and then immediately being like, okay, now he's on his own in Mexico. Like, how on earth is he going to suddenly track all these people down? And I think that's done really well as well, which we'll get to more in the spoilers. But I think that's kind of...
I have friends.
It's explained quickly and efficiently in a way that, like, if you know Saw, it makes perfect sense and moves the narrative on quickly. Whereas I think for a more casual audience, they won't really care. They're like, oh yeah, he just made some calls and now these people are locked up, and now we get to the stuff that we want to see, you know, the traps. Whereas, so like, I think they really dodge so many pitfalls. Like, this is something that we said about last week going into this film, was like, are they going to avoid the many pitfalls that the recent sequels have done? And like, coming out of it, I really think they did. I think they doubled down on the things that we've been missing for so long. And I think that one of the big notes I made was talking about fan service, which you've already mentioned. And like, for me, I think fan service gets such a bad rap. Like, it's
perceived as a bad term, and it really shouldn't be. Like, why not give fans what they want? You know,
context is so important. And I think when it comes to specifically films, yes, there's going to be director's visions and artistic merit and all of that good stuff, but specifically with franchise films, and specifically with a 10th installment, especially when, in my opinion, the last 3 have really shit the bed for fans. If you're not trying to do fan service, why on earth are you making a 10th Saw film? It just makes no sense. Exactly. Like, so to me, you can't talk about fan service in a negative connotation with a 10th franchise film. It doesn't work that way. They're only still making Fast and the Furious movies for the fans and all of these other franchises that live on for so many years. So I don't buy that for a second. And I can only speak from my experience, but for me, there's only one thing in this whole film that I think is a step too far in terms of fan service, which I can't say right now because it's a spoiler, but we'll get to that. But everything else, I think, is spot on. It's perfectly what I want. And yes, is there tapes? Is there traps? Is there Billy? You know, is the song there? Like, you know, all of the things you'd expect in a Saw movie are there. But I think they're all done really well and was really effective. And for the first time, it felt like Saw. That was something that we keep saying and keep trying to hammer home with those recent films, is how much they just lacked the identity of a Saw film. And yeah. I think going back to basics, yes, Tobin Bell is going to do a lot of the heavy lifting, which he does so brilliantly, you know, and he is incredible in this film. We had hoped that he would be good. I think he way exceeds my expectations. I really wondered if he could carry a Saw film in 2023. And he does it flawlessly in a way that is so remarkable. And so we get to see some of the best John we've ever seen, let alone the most, you know, the 10th film. And we're still breaking boundaries with that, which I think is so exciting, because Saw always had a lot of, they would waste a lot of time with sometimes characters that you wasn't the biggest fans of. And so I think for them to be like, no, this is John's story. This is personal to him. I think as well, like this story, which, you know, we were aware of going in because of the trailer, but I think it's a really genius way of doing it. You know, we talked about before that it is similar-ish to what we saw in Saw 6, how, like, the medical companies were screwing him over with his insurance because they didn't want to pay for his treatment in America. And I think, like, a slight twist on that of having him go for this more radical, you know, off-the-grid form of treatment that ends up being a scam is, like, that's so clever, man. And it's so perfect that it's, they even say it in the film, it's like, of all the people you could scam, you scammed John Kramer.
Yeah.
It's so good, isn't it? Like, it's such a good idea for a standalone Saw film, I think, because it fits perfectly with John. Like, John's character is a guy who's at the end of his life, literally.
Yeah.
Exactly. But he's always been vulnerable. Like, that's always been something that is fascinating with John, because of what's happened to him with Jill and with his life. I think he is someone that would fall for something like this, because unfortunately these are vulnerable people that, like we said before, don't have any other hopes, and they want to rely on the unthinkable. You know, they want that they talk about it like the magic beans, and it's like you desperately want it more than anything to be real, even though you know in your heart of your hearts it's probably not going to be true.
Definitely. I think, like, this movie really hurts my brain, because there's so much shit going on, and particularly if you're such a fan of the franchise like we are, we've got 9 movies that precede this, we've got 6 awesome movies, we've got the last 3 that sucked, and so it's like, you know, can this movie get it back to the heights that it did prior? And I'm like, This is right in so many wrongs, but it's also, it didn't quite feed me what I wanted it to feed me in a lot of ways as well. And so I was torn, and I think I'm more torn on it than, and I wonder, like, rewatches, whether I feel less torn and whether I'm being more critical because of what's been or what came before. I really don't know, but it just hurts my brain because, there were a lot of things to like, you know. I think Tobin Bell and John Kramer, you know, was fantastic. Jigsaw was very different to what he was. I think, you know, Billy, the use of Billy worked really well. You know, he got a really nice moment, and I think that's what he needed. I think the recordings were pointless because he's in the fucking room. And so why have them? There's I think the when we get all of these characters, you know, mild spoilers, when they're all just trapped in this room, it then becomes like incoherent as to what this game is. You know, we've seen in the past that, you know, if there's multiple people in the room, it's like a, you know, it's a multiple person game, and there's multiple things going on, and it were, and that wasn't it. It was just a case of John going to Amanda like, oh, start that one, will you? And then that, and then the person going, I'm not doing it. And then they pull a switch and then it starts. And it was multiple single games with the, everyone else in the room. And that felt a little bit strange. I do feel as well, like when I start to go into the games and the actual, you know, the traps that happened, they were incredibly gory and at times made me, made my stomach churn. Like there's a couple of them that are just like really rough to watch, so hard to watch, the sound and the violence. But once it had happened, I was like, man, is every one of these saw traps going to be like, you got to cut off a body part and can you cut off enough in the time frame? And almost every trap in the movie was that. And I think that is almost something that I felt was a critique of Saw historically and wasn't true, because I felt like the traps always did stuff that were fresh and different. And there was sometimes that, but it wasn't always that. That was the thing for the whole movie for me, where it was just like, here's the trap start. Okay, cut off an arm. Can you do it quick? Can you cut off your arm in a minute? And then that's just every trap.
Yeah.
Like, can you cut off an arm in a minute? Can you cut off a leg in a minute? And I was just like, it's just they didn't feel unique and special like the, you know, the heyday was. And that's where this movie sits for me, where I'm like, I don't want to bring the last three movies into question, in particular the last two. Like, you know, since the franchise was in its heyday, they've had two attempts to bring it back and they've been tragic, and this isn't tragic, but it also feels like it's not fully achieving what it was back in the day with things like that, where the traps were unsatisfying. I think I wasn't, when credits rolled, I wasn't satisfied with where everything had ended up. And I was like, God damn it. I need a bit more. And then we did get a post-credit scene, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but that didn't, it gave me something, but it didn't give me the answers to this, where I'm like, oh, we're watching these scumbags, and in particular certain characters, where I'm like, I really need them to get their just desserts. And, you know, that was a little bit unsatisfying. The traps were, like I say, you know, it was the same thing over and over again. John being interacting with the victims, I do fully get your point, and I do look at it a little bit differently with that lens, that, you know, it is very personal. But it's the fact that what's the doctor's name? The lady. Yeah, she's literally like, oh yeah, I know who you are. You know, she kind of calls him out on it, like, oh yeah, you know, you're the Jigsaw killer. And I'm like, what? I'm like, it feels like they're talking in 2023, even though they're going to be talking between Saw 1 and Saw 2. Mm. And so, do you know what I mean? Like, there's just a few bits like that that I feel like I'm being overly critical, but ultimately for me as like a mega fan, I do start to put these things in place with it, where I'm like, oh, okay, that feels weird for the timeline that everyone knows who John Kramer and the Jigsaw Killer is in Mexico. You know, and, you know, the traps just felt a little bit like they'd be having it, you know, him and Amanda would just be having a chat, and then they'd be like, oh yeah, probably start the next trap. You know, it's been a while. The audience needs some bloodshed. Can someone cut off an arm and die, please? You know, and there were little bits like that where it delivered on a lot of things, and this is not bad, but it certainly didn't give me like this, the highs of the franchise that preceded it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, because I definitely agree and disagree with a lot of it. I think, like, overall, I definitely like the movie more, because it was, they've just delivered what I didn't think was possible at this point, which is just a good, fun Saw film. And I do think that's what it is. I don't think it is some, like, ground-shattering thing. I don't think it suddenly makes Saw relevant in 2023 and we're now back in the yearly cycle or anything like
that. Yeah, we're now getting one every 12 months.
And I think, like, it's a shame, because there's a... I always, in my mind, I keep comparing it to Scream this year, because
that's the problem, isn't it?
Because they did something which like no other horror franchise has ever done, and so to kind of respect legacy and then to move on to, from something that I love and make me way more excited for the future now than seeing legacy return, and so Saw's never going to be able to do that, like, ever. So for them to just go hard on legacy and just go hard on John and Amanda, I'm perfectly fine with, because I've lost faith that they're going to make me love characters like I loved John and Amanda and Hoffman in the original films. I just know that's not going to happen. So I'll just take this for what it is. Yeah. I think with the traps, like, I disagree with the fact that with them being in a room and them just having like individual traps. I don't have a problem with that at all.
It was the incoherency of it that, like, they didn't flow, I think, is the thing.
Yeah, that's fair. But I just want to say, like, it's for me, it's, again, it goes with this being a medical team and this they're all being in this together. I think it's part of the traps is that he wants them all to see what's going to happen to them, and so I don't mind them being in the same room. I get with you that it feels a little bit random of who's doing what, and especially when there's a real confusing tiny subplot involving Amanda, where she kind of helps someone because she makes someone else go before them, and it's so unclear as to why she did that.
The drug addiction.
Yeah, like they're trying to show that Amanda is still weak at this point, and she keeps saying, you know, like, I'm not ready to do this without you, and you're gone. And he's kind of telling her, like, you're ready. And I know that goes exactly into the demise of Amanda, in 3. But like, I didn't need that reminder here. I would have much rather it had been more like he's teaching her the ropes, rather, because then that feels more way closer to the end of 3, which I don't think this movie is. Again, getting into the state of John Kramer, which is such a shit show. So I didn't need that. And then the traps themselves, like, yeah, they are exactly what you said, of like, they do just follow the same thing of just how much self-mutilation can you do in a short period of time. And it was fascinating. Like, I've always wondered with Saw how, like, we've known this for a while, but not all traps are created equal. And, like, some traps are laughably easy, and some traps are basically impossible. And that's not even talking about when they are actually impossible, in the later sequels with, like, Hoffman and his fuckery. But I'm on about just straight-up John Kramer. He actually wants to test human beings' traps. Some of them are... Like the, again, which we'll get to in the spoilery, but the final trap, which is saved for our big bad villain, is a joke in comparison to what one of her random lowly people has to do. And I'm dying to say it, but I'll save it for the spoilers. But it's like, come on, like, what that guy has to do, and if you've seen the film, we all know what I'm talking about, in such a short period of time, is, like, arguably the hardest trap anyone's ever been given in all 10 films, I think. And he's so close to succeeding as well. I mean, he literally does what he was asked of, and still doesn't succeed. And that happens a couple of times, which I always find to be a little bit frustrating.
Which one? Just remind me a little bit of that guy.
The brain one.
Oh, that's obscene. Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, it's so crazy. And so what happened in my mind as well is we get... one proper trap before that, which is pretty fucking gnarly, and I think overall, pound for pound, is the best trap in the film. Graphics, you know, violence wise, the performance, kind of like thinking like, oh, are they gonna get it or are they not, and it really going down to the wire. Like, I loved everything about that
one.
Yeah, I thought that was fantastic. And because we hadn't seen multiple, you know, self mutilations at that point, yeah, as well, that worked. So I thought that was brilliant.
That one was the one that made me feel a bit ill.
Yeah, that was, you like, know? Really, really good. And so then I really thought it would require a bit more nuance and a bit more maybe thinking with later ons, whereas, no, it was always just like, no, it's just going to be a variation on this, but not as good. But then when we go to the brain one after that, I'm like, oh, damn, we're ramping up quickly. I'm like, man, if these are the first two, I can't wait to see what the rest of the traps are. And then they go a bit soft. Like, the one after that is not the worst. I think it's fairly doable to survive. And then the last one is ridiculous. It's a joke. It's like such a piece of piss, especially for the person that they put in it specifically. It was so obvious what was going to happen.
And it made me really angry. Like, I left that trap feeling very dissatisfied and angry.
I still am, which we'll definitely get to spoilers soon. But so it's like, it definitely has these small issues that is there for sure. And like, I couldn't believe that. And I think it is in the part that again, this is just a small portion, because I love Cecilia overall as a character. I think she's fantastic. But there was that one point of, I think it was in the same part of her, you know, basically saying she know who John Kramer was, which I didn't like. And then she says the fucking jig fucking saw line, which I couldn't believe they put in this film. I like laughed out loud because I was like, holy shit, they are obsessed with putting this dog shit line in these films. Because I always think of these recent films, I don't know why, my mind always defaults to jig fucking saw. And because I know for a fact that they never would have said that line in the first six films. And I don't know why it always stuck with me. So the fact that they even snuck that into a good Saw film that I really like blows my mind. Because I'm like, they just couldn't help themselves, could they? They were like, it didn't land the first time. Maybe let's just try it again. So like I say, there are these small things that don't work. But I think there are, again, really good elements. I think two things that are massively Saw to me that I was really excited about and why I was, you know, really fulfilled as a Saw fan. The color palette is back. It's classic Saw, you know, with the kind of orange and blue hues in the warehouse scenario. And I really wondered if that would still work, because it is so classic to that original film that then made the sequels. But it does. It feels great. It feels natural. It feels like, yep, this is what it should look like. So I was really happy with just the overall look and tone of this film. And then the music, like we talked about the trailer having this kind of licensed slowdown song. And I'm saying, and you know, I said, like, I get it. That's what modern day Saw would have, but it doesn't feel like Saw to me. I want generic rock music playing in the background. And that's exactly what we got throughout this entire film. You know, we got basically like generic tension building music until we got the classic song. And so there wasn't some random bit where I was like, oh, they're playing Hez X popular song done ironically, you know. And I'm so happy, because I really thought when Billy is first arrived, I really thought that would be accompanied with an ironic song, an ironic like 80s slowdown cover.
Very consistent with the franchise, you know, the way it looked and particularly sounded, you know. And I think, you know, it's the first time in years that I've seen that Lionsgate logo. Do you know what I mean? We were seeing that every year. And the second you saw that logo, you were like, oh, fuck. The second this logo disappears, we're going to get a gnarly trap. And, like, it popped up on screen in the cinema, and I just had this flashback of, like, so many years ago, and thinking, like, oh, shit, here we go. And, you know, they didn't have that for the last couple of movies.
They brought that back for this one.
And I was like, you know, instantly that got me back into that headspace of like, oh, yeah, this is just a predecessor to the, you know, this is just a sequel to Saw 7 that they decided to just set between Saw 1 and Saw 2.
Mm.
And, you know, it did definitely feel like that.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we should get to spoilers, because there's like so much that we've been dancing around.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, like overall, or I guess recommendations, I would highly recommend this. Like, if you're a long suffering Saw fan like we are, I definitely think this is kind of builds the franchise back up, and is a, like, I'll be more than happy for it to go away now, because I think this is what this has shown me, that like this is as good as it can be, and it's very good. Like, I think it's very enjoyable. I've already recommended it to some Saw fans that I know, who, where I actively told them not to watch the last two and they didn't, where I'm like, no, you should see this, because I think if you're a fan of the franchise, and specifically, you know, Tobin Bell and John Kramer, you're gonna get so much out of this. Like, I was giddy in the cinema watching so many points of him just talking, and being like, man, why did we go away from this for so long? You know, like, it, we said before, this felt like it was out of an alternate universe where they should have made this years ago. And listen, that's in the past. I'm just glad we had this film now. Like I say, it's a shame, because we could have had so much more from this franchise than what we've had. but this goes a long way in, you know, in, you know, instilling that confidence and being like, yep, I don't care about the future right now at all. I'm just happy that we got a fun standalone John Kramer movie finally after all these years. And so, yeah, I would highly recommend it from that standpoint for any Saw fan.
Yeah, fuck, I think that's the problem is I agree that, like, and I think that's the thing that, like, seeing this movie and seeing how good a job they did with a lot of it, I did walk away thinking, like, god damn it, I wish we could have had what I hoped we could have had. Do you know what I mean? And ultimately this movie, you know, can't do that because we've got the stuff that's happened before and we're in 2023 now. But yeah, you know, that frustration aside, I think, you know, yeah, this movie is very good. It didn't fully deliver for me, but it delivered more than Saw has in a decade. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to downplay that. It doesn't get back to the original heights, but it still, it gave me a love letter enough where I felt satisfied mostly. I think the only thing is that I was let down by the diversity of the traps. And you know, I wanted a bit more from that, and with them all being in the same room, I think it just took away from giving us these individual experiences. And if it doesn't give us that, it doesn't give us a reveal. You know, normally when we've got a group of people together, it's like, oh, okay, who's the real asshole or what's the reveal? But we knew everything once they were all in the room. And so then it was just like, oh, let's just see him get fucked up. And they didn't, you know, that wasn't what I wanted them to have happen to him. So I was left, you know, a bit dissatisfied by that, but definitely, you know, satisfied with the amount of John Kramer I got and a lot of the other stuff. You know, they did more right than wrong, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, full spoiler alert. Because we need to digest and dissect so many different things from this film. But we have to start with one man and one man only. Because, man, we've waited so long for this. Like, I'm just going to enjoy it for what it is. Because I never thought it would ever happen. We've speculated for years in these sequels about, are they ever going to give Hoffman his flowers and, you know, kind of give him his due in this franchise and stop acting like he wasn't a part of it for so long. And again, this to me was something that, yes, I would have liked more, but what I got, I think was brilliant for this film. I think the three times that he's intersected within the movie, which is the first time, you know, he's on the phone, he's like, I need some help finding these people, detective. I think that line alone, yeah, like that is so, that's the perfect way of doing it.
Yeah.
I kind of shot up and then the funny thing is I started doubting myself immediately because I was like, oh, this is me being a fucking idiot again, just like I did in the last two films. Thinking,
nah, I was completely Kool-Aid drunk.
Would you just believed it straight away? Because
I absolutely did.
I had the PTSD where I couldn't. Yeah. I was like, it has to be Hoffman, but I couldn't fully believe it. And then obviously we hear his voice on the phone, which, because I think it is just cutting back to that scene, isn't it, prior of him like finding them all. And so you hear it and I'm like, oh, that is him, like that's crazy, it's actually him. And obviously getting to the final the post-credit sequence and you know, I assumed it would be something else involving Hoffman, not what we got. But I was super happy because that was a massive loose end, like one of the loose ends. Unfortunately, there are quite a few. But that was one that I really did want to know about. The guy who initially recommends this place, the treatment.
I was waiting for him to get his comeuppance.
Yeah, well, I was fascinated because, again, this was I loved this scene early on when he bumps into him after the cancer, you know, meeting or whatever it's called. I forgot the word. But like, yeah, you know, therapy, self-help or whatever, yeah, therapy, like, that was an awesome sequence as well, and something that we've speculated on over the years of that happening in a Saw film, which finally happened. But then I loved that. It felt so genuine to me, and it felt real in that guy's face, and like he genuinely was like, I can't believe it, you know. So I wondered, like, had he just been scammed? And I was I'm going to say mildly disappointed that he was in on it, because it was just another, like, yeah, of course everyone in this world's awful. Because I did kind of wish he was scammed, and then he'd have to, like, break it to him to be like, yeah, sorry, like, you have still got it. Yeah, that's dark,
bro. Sorry.
Yeah, and, like, that would have been, you know, still dark and sad, but, like, I get it. It makes a lot more sense for the movie to just be like, yep, it's another awful person, and guess what that means in this world? Someone else to put in a trap. So it makes sense. And then, yeah, so to see Hoffman there in the flesh, in all of his glory, he looked fantastic. I'll cherish it. Like, it'll be one of my favorite moments of the year, was finally seeing Hoffman on screen. It was fantastic.
He was next to John Kramer as well. Yeah. And just interacting with him face to face with a victim in front of him. It was truly fantastic. And it is, you know, it's one of them things where you look at it both ways, where I love looking at it the way that you described, where you're just like, oh yeah, we just take this. It's like, we finally got it.
Mm.
But then part of me is just like, oh, I want so much more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, like, it's interesting.
I'm like, oh, you motherfuckers, I want it so badly. And yeah. You know I want it. That's why you leave it as a post-credit scene. You know, it's like putting Yoshi in the post-credit scene for Mario. It's like, you bastards, you know. We know we want it. Just give it to us.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like I say, as a standalone film, and if this is it, and I'm more than happy right now to just be content, it does leave it in such an interesting place, because with Hoffman, there's so much more they can do. But then there is the huge loose end, and I think something that we're both unanimous on in terms of how unsatisfying it was, which is Cecilia Liven. I think it's crazy. Yeah. I think it's absolutely absurd. I think that, you know, to backtrack, as a character in this movie, phenomenal. I think she's so good as a villain. I think she's so good as a folly to John. And the back and forth they have, aside from that one, you know, weird scene where she knows who he is and says, Jig fucking Saw. I think the rest of all of their back and forths, when she's in character and being the nice person, or when her mask has slipped, I loved all of that. You know, like, how she just immediately guts the woman and gets the intestines out is just insane. Yeah. So I loved her as a character, but she is arguably the singular most despicable person we've ever had in Saw. You know, she is
unequivocally.
Yeah, she is scamming the vulnerable. She is more than willing to kill innocent people. She is more than willing to kill innocent children. She straight up murders someone who she knows, and then immediately throws her partner, you know, to the wolves to save her own skin. And so she is awful. She has no redeeming qualities, and she gets to live. And I know what people say, well, she won the trap. Well, that gets to my second point. The last trap's a joke. It's way too fucking easy. And the fact that it is a two-person, only one of you can live trap, it then just becomes painfully obvious that she's gonna screw him over, because that's ultimately what she's shown. We've also had really obvious dialogue, which I didn't like, because it was very on the nose. Like, you know she's gonna kill you, right? You know she'll burn you alive, right? And it was that was annoying to me, because I could just see it being like, I was like, man, please don't cut back to this. And of course they did. And I was like, mate, it happened 10 minutes ago. You don't need to do a cutback to something 10 minutes ago. So to her to end, because I, you know, when the movie ended and I was happy, because I loved seeing the three of them walk out together and it kind of fade into Saw, I was like, man, this is such an almost beautiful way to end a Saw film for the first time, which I loved. It really gave me, like, hope in a weird way. but I really needed that final scene of Hoffman just being like, yeah, fuck this bitch, and him just going and straight up murdering her, because that is what Hoffman does. He doesn't believe in these traps. So he's like, yeah, no, he's a killer person. Yeah, he's a serial killer. So I would have been more than happy to see that. That would have been awesome for me. So yeah, there is this huge loose end that it's like, if that's where they're going with a potential sequel, that's already a bit annoying, because it's like, it is what it is. But I don't think we're going to get that, because the direction of the last three films have all gone in vastly different directions at times. So there is something that, yeah, this is a film that I really like, but there is something that is annoying, because watching it back, I was looking forward to seeing Cecilia's conclusion. It was going to be awesome.
Batshit crazy trap, and just her to get fucked up because she deserved it.
Yeah, and I wanted her confidence to be her downfall, because that was what I thought they were setting up. She was so cocky and arrogant, And I was like, oh, you're going to think this trap's simple and you've miscalculated something and that's going to be your downfall. But no, it was just a really easy trap that she could win.
Yeah, and I think that's it. And it just, visually, it wasn't a fun trap either. You know, and it was very dissatisfying for that to be the finale of the movie with the trap, you know. And I think, you know, it was one where, like, if they hadn't given me that post-credit scene, I almost didn't get back to where I should have been with that crazy scene and seeing Hoffman after all this time because of how salty I felt by the ending, you know, where I was actively frustrated by it. And I think, you know, to have, like you say, the worst person that we've had in this entire franchise and for them not to get their just desserts. And I think the whole point of John's traps is people that survive them and grow as a person,
you know,
and they change because of what John did. You know, he helped down
on what she is as a person.
Sorry?
She got to double down on who she already was as a person.
Exactly. They're like, oh, you want to be a piece of shit? Go on, then be a piece of shit. And she's like, okay, that's exactly what I'll do. And then she lived.
But it's so weird, isn't it? You know? It really isn't a John trap at all.
No, and I think that's like a lot of my feeling in this movie, that there's a chunk of stuff where it's like it's doing everything that I want it to do, but there are just so many parts of it that don't feel quite right, you know. John talking a lot to the victims, I see where you're coming from with it, and you know, but it still felt a little bit off. The fact that they just didn't keep flowing, and there was so much kind of just disconnect between them all and gaps, and then just this one at the end, you know, it was someone doing their best job of what the Saw movies were, and they did a better job of the last two, you know, but it still just didn't quite get to that level. And like this one in particular, where it's like, when someone really deserves it, they need to get like wrecked, you know, and she really didn't.
I think it's credit to the film that they've created someone that we hate that much, because again, I can't think of someone watching a Saw movie that I've actively been looking forward to it, you know, and that's something that is genuinely good writing, and something which every Saw movie should strive to do, is to have someone that you're actively like getting giddy in your seat, being like, oh, well, I've had to see like not innocent, but maybe some like deluded people, or some, you know, arguably these people they're her team, but they're like vulnerable in their own way and were taken advantage of by her. You know, and they did bad things, but you know, maybe it was similar, you know, it is very similar to Amanda in that sense of like, you know, not to get into it, but like it's very interesting the more you think about it. And so like there really is only one true big baddie in this film, and for them to just get away and for it to end with her head in that slot, which is just so easily killable, you know, it's just sticking there, just ready to be killed, and they just walk away. And I'm like, oh man, like I just needed Hoffman to go in there with a fucking giant axe, you know, like that would have just been the perfect conclusion to this film.
Just her like laughing with her head out, and then just the axe goes to her head, and then you just see Hoffman, and then he just walks off with Amanda and John, and I'd be like, oh, okay, sweet.
Because that would have been great. The thing I mentioned earlier with fan service, and the only thing that I was like, oh, this is a step too far, is the use of the bathroom in that final sequence. It is laughable. Like, it is the one thing that makes me eye roll, and it's a shame because it's in this great moment. I'm happy they tied up this loose end. I'm happy I got an answer to that question early on, and I'm buzzing to see Hoffman and him interact with John. But why the fuck is it gotta be in that goddamn bathroom, man? Like, it's so, I get it, it's awesome, we all love it, but it is specifically them being in it at that time makes no sense. What, so they just took this one random dude into the bathroom? Like, yeah, but
also, so we're now saying that Hoffman was with Jigsaw from, you know, that point, and like, yeah, prior to that point, and also I think a lot of Jigsaw's victims were there to be discovered. You know, he wanted people to know what he was doing. He wanted that message to get out there. He wanted the police to find them. He didn't reuse the same crime scenes over and over again. And I think that's, you know, for me, the excitement is, oh, okay, how many people did they kill between Saw 1 and 3 before John died? Can we get a couple more movies out of this? You know, and when they're just like recycling the scenes, I'm like, oh no, that's not really what, you know, when you watch Saw 1, you start to unpack it. You're like, oh man, he's done this so many times before and the police are on him, but they can't quite get to him. And that, you know, fed into to what was the great kind of, you know, the fun mystery of Saw for me. And yeah, I just felt like this one kind of, yeah, reusing that. It would have been better if they were like in his lair from like 2. You know what I mean? And just being like, oh, okay, we're gonna play on the, if you love the franchise, you don't just love the first movie. So if we go to one of these other places that we've not seen for so long, that would be a bigger pop for me.
Yeah, it is that thing of, like you say, they just overly simplify it at times because they've gone so hard on the fan service and they don't know when to cut it off, where they're like, you know, I honestly feel like I was half expecting there to be like a final sequence where they are scouting out, you know, like Adam and stuff from the first film. Like I really was thinking like, oh, are they going to try and tie it back to Lawrence Gordon and have like a Lee Winnell cameo? Are we going to get a Zep cameo? Like I really thought like, God, are they really going to go that hard with it? And it's just like,
oh, we should have got the Zep. Like he got wheeled around so much in that hospital.
Yeah, God
damn it.
So that's why I'm like, man, it's funny because they can go too far with it, and it's like, and again, that's
not too far.
Yeah, like I obviously love the actor so much, so I'd be like, oh, that's crazy. But some things are just left unturned, and it's like the bathroom has had its moment. You know, it's been used in so many different things. Like I feel like it's devalued the ending of Saw 2 so much now over time, because at the time it was so awesome to go back there, and now it's like, God, there's like 1,000 people have been killed in this goddamn room.
Yeah, it's got so many people in there at this point, like it's mad.
It's crazy.
I still disagree that I would, there isn't anything this year that I'd pop harder for than a Zep cameo. Yeah,
like I would have liked it, but they gave me what I wanted, and they didn't.
It wasn't.
I really want to like double down on that. The fact that they did it so well, because I've wanted Hoffman back for so long.
He felt so Hoffman.
Yeah, but even though we want to see what happened to him ultimately, because that's the kind of point of frustration, is that he is locked in that bathroom with a reverse bear trap on. And I know that we're probably never going to get that conclusion, but I still like the fact that, yeah, they filled in gaps with him. And like I say, and again, narrative wise, I love this because when it was first Amanda doing the attacks and that, I was a bit frustrated because I was like, man, Hoffman's right there. But, like, I think the way they did it did make sense, because he is an active detective, so he can kind of use them abilities to scout people, but it would be much harder. Yeah, but it would be much harder for him to go out to Mexico and get his hands dirty with this one, whereas, like, flying Amanda out on her own does make more sense, you know, because she's got no ties. Like, she is just his lapdog, whereas, like, Hoffman does have other shit going on, so again, narrative-wise, it all does make sense of, like, this trio.
Yeah,
going back to the trio as well, like, we need to forget that there's anyone else involved, because in my eyes, there just isn't. You know, it's the three of them.
I know. You have to forget that.
Yeah, I'm so glad there wasn't a reference to, like, other people, because at this point, God, there's so many that they could have done, and I'm just glad it's like, no, it was Amanda, and it was Hoffman, and that was it. And I'm like, with John, you know, they were a trio of killers until the end. And so, yeah, I love that aspect of it.
It will forever just be a trio of killers for me.
Definitely, for sure. So, yeah, it was a great time. Like, I'm happy to have seen a Saw movie that doesn't actively make me want to die for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that this is, it's not one of the best ones. I would have to...
Where do you rank it?
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, it's easy for me to say that there are now 7 Saw movies I really like, and I would recommend them, and I think they're all ones you should watch. It really gets hard post-3 for me, specific, you know, 4, 5, and 6, of like, what's the good bits, what's the bad bits, like, I never remember if I love 5 overall, but I love the ending of 5 so much that it really, it takes it up so many levels. And again, the fact that this movie has some negative aspects in the ending will dock it points over time specifically. Because that ending with Strom and Hoffman of 5 is like, I love the ending of 3. I mean, I love the original trilogy so much, but I think 5 is the perfect, we said at the time, the perfect epilogue to that story. And it tied up the loose ends, and I would have been more than happy for Saw to end at 5. And I think it got, even though I'd really like 6, that is when it started to get messy, because I think it set up a lot of stuff with Jill that they then really struggled to answer in 3D. It's, you know, so spectacularly bad.
So yeah, I think mean, that's the problem,
the of the end post 5.
6 set it up, it's just the 7 shat the bed.
Yeah, but it's like, I think it's to do that, isn't it? It's harder to hit the landing than it is to kind of be like, oh, it's cool that Jill's now working for him and she's kind of trying to tie up this loose end with Hoffman. But actually seeing that transpire is a lot harder to pull off, isn't it? But yeah, I still think this is a great, it's a great film, first and foremost. Like, looking at it in the context of this year for horror, it's certainly one of my favorites, because I think it's a great standalone revenge film, and I do think it's another great franchise film, and we've seen quite a few of them recently, and it's certainly not, it doesn't reinvent the wheel and get me really excited for the future like something like Scream did. This is a legacy film first and foremost. And I think that's what, you know, the Halloween movies recently and other ones, where if you're like a diehard fan and you were just desperate to see Jamie Lee Curtis in that role, I'm sure you were very satisfied with that trilogy. And that's how I feel about this film, is like, I've been desperate to see Tobin Bell, and I've desperately been, you know, wanting to see any sort of reference to Hoffman. And they gave me that. So I come out of it happy, but I know that it's got flaws. Like, it's definitely got flaws, and we've spent a lot of time talking about them, but I still like it, warts and all.
Yeah, I think I do like it. I think for me, you know, yeah, this is the best Saw movie since Saw 6. I don't think it gets involved with 1 to 6 for me, but being so far removed and having so much trash, the fact that we're back to that, like, oh, okay, yeah, this is still a good movie, then I'm more happy than I'm not happy. Am I selfish and still want to be happier? I am, which is just probably a me problem more than anything, but I just, you know, I did want a little bit more, but I still am happy that I'm not, you know, so unsatisfied like I've been before, and ultimately it still was more fun than it wasn't, which is such a difference to what we've had in Saw in recent times.
Yeah, it's weird coming out of a Saw movie. I'm like, man, I don't have this just overall negativity and black cloud and, oh, what could have been, you know. I'm satisfied for now. Like I say, and I was coming into this with not wanting a new Saw movie. Like, that was, you know, when we talked about it in the news and stuff, we were very skeptical, and, you know, we laughed it off when they were like, oh, Shawnee Smith and Tobin Bell are back, we're like, here we fucking go again. Like, we were so not ready for this because we were so recently burned. And so I think the fact that I wasn't in a place to receive this movie, and again, I don't want to, you know, go back over the past, but God, I wish we'd have got this film when I was at the peak of my fandom and ready for a good Saw film, because they burned those bridges a long time ago. And so then now we need to rebuild that relationship with Saw. And this goes a long way doing that. So
they have definitely rebuilt things. But I think that's the thing. If this movie come, you know, they released Saw 7 and it's like, oh yeah, that was a misstep. And then this movie comes out and they're like, you know what? We're stripping it back. We're going to go back to between 1 and 2. We're going to have a fun time. And then if the traps were just a bit better, then I'd be like, fuck yeah, this movie's a banger.
Yeah.
You know, but because we're so far removed and the traps didn't quite land for me, I am just a bit more negative, you know, about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's it. God, it's crazy, man. Talking about these Saw movies.
My brain hurts.
I know, it's mad. It's like, I still, and I think as well that you're probably there as well, but it's, especially with franchise movies, I mean, we definitely had it with Scream, but like, it's so hard to kind of...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I need to see it again.
Yeah, it's so hard to quantify what I actually feel about this movie right now. Like I say, definitely off just one watch. You know, we only watched this yesterday. So it's like, you know, barely had 24 hours to kind of process it.
It's not enough time for something that cuts as deep as a Saw movie, for sure. you know, it's one that, like, I will be fascinated to know how I feel about it in a few months' time after rewatching it.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, that was our discussion of Saw X. I will take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, that is pretty much it for this week. It's a nice long one because we're talking about a franchise close to our hearts. And it's funny because next week we've got The Exorcist,
which is right. I mean, Exorcist back to back. It's wild that those two movies, those two franchises, are just like in the cinema again, back to back.
Yeah, and they are the opposite for us, because it's a franchise that we've spent so much time talking about and loving and then being disappointed with, and just have so much feeling. You know, there was so much emotion in what we were just talking about. I have nothing for The Exorcist as a franchise. You know, I've spoke about it before. I actively dislike the first film and I've not cared to watch any of the other ones. Like, it is that one of, like, everyone's got that one classic horror movie that they don't like. Mine is The Exorcist. So, but again, I'm not carrying that into this film. I don't care. I'm even putting aside who directed it, even though I'm now bringing it up.
I think this is the opposite of putting it aside, bro. I think you're bringing it to the forefront.
I thought you'd trick everyone. Why are you outing me?
I'm not going to mention the director, myself. But I fucking hate him.
You said that, not me. Why would you say such a thing? God, that's harsh. So yeah, we got that, and then, like I say, I mean VHS is just around the corner as well, and then all that good shit. Like, I can't wait for The House of Usher on Netflix as well, man. Really, I'm so in the mood for Flanagan right now. Give me that full Flanagan experience. Like, that is talking about, you know, when you're in the mood for certain things. I'm almost like, I've been so close to just rewatching his old shit because that's how much I'm in the mood for it, but I need to just wait because it's right around the corner.
Yeah, like, I rewatched Midnight Mass earlier in the year, and like, I could not be more ready for Flanagan. Like, just give me that Flanagan.
Yeah,
like, and especially with this, like, this is like the finale of his Netflix saga.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it just feels like he's gonna just punch us in the face.
Yeah, and I feel like we already have a trend of, like, our favorite things this year have been TV more than film.
Yeah, exactly.
So I feel like it's going to continue that. With The Last of Us and Black Mirror, now we've got this.
Yeah. Like, Flanagan has been our favorite stuff when we were loving movies.
Yeah.
And this year we're loving TV, so I'm just like, go on, give me that Flanagan shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I cannot wait. It's going to be exciting. But yeah, all that good stuff, but very packed October to look forward to. But that was episode 365. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. How could